Well, listening to all of that, the Reverend Graham Sawyer, who's the vicar of Briarcliff and Burnley and was one of the people attacked by Peter Ball, he's in our radio car. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for taking the time to do this. I wanted to say before we started that I'm not sitting here with a list of questions. I want to have a conversation with you, but I've got no desire to be prurient. Obviously, a very bad thing happened to you, so if in the course of the conversation we get into areas you don't want to talk about, please feel free to say, let's talk about something else. Is that okay?
It's certainly okay and very kind. Thank
okay.
you.
How did you first become aware of Peter Ball? What was he doing in your life?
Well, at the time I was a teenager living in Eastbourne, which was within the Diocese of Chichester, where he was a bishop. And I thought I discerned a vocation to be ordained. And so I was sent to Peter Ball, who was going to interview me and decide whether or not I should go forward for training.
And how did he strike you? What was that relationship initially like?
Well, he was very warm-hearted, very credible. He was often talked about as being a living saint, very endearing and very kind on the surface.
And clearly something terrible happened.
Absolutely, and it's only in the last few years that we've found that, I've found that there were many other people who experienced the same sort of treatment, and indeed probably much worse than I received. I'm thinking particularly today as I read this report, it took me an hour to read, I was thinking of Neil Todd, who killed himself 4 years ago. I'm in touch with many of the people who survived the sexual abuse perpetrated by Peter Ball, many other people who have been victims of sexual abuse perpetrated by clergy have got in touch with me since I waived my anonymity a couple of years ago. And it's been very interesting to hear the patterns of behaviour, the similarity of behaviour of Bishop Peter Ball and indeed others.
What was the effect of these assaults on you?
Well, it left me feeling somewhat confused. I was a minor at the time. When you have someone who is so saintly, appears to be so saintly and so kind and so pastoral, asking very intimate, inappropriate questions, and seeking to have a physical intimacy with you, it is, of course, very confusing, and it takes many years to work through that. I need to say, I bear the man no ill will. At the centre of the Lord's Prayer, we're told that we must forgive in order that we must be forgiven. And I forgive the man from my heart. It's not for me, though, to forgive him for what he did to others, but certainly through forgiveness, I have to say I don't bear him any ill will. Although it was right that he was brought to trial and it was right that he was sent to prison.
And so we have this report, which you've taken the time and trouble to read, of course. What are your observations on that?
I find it rather underwhelming, to be honest. Took me an hour and a half to read the whole thing. There wasn't much in it that was new to me. A few extra details, perhaps, but a lot of it has been known to many people who have been seeking to change the culture in the church in the way that it deals with these matters, and particularly with the way that it deals with the victims of abuse. And I was appalled. Dame Moira Gibbon, her foreword, she says, "We've no doubt that the church has a genuine commitment to meeting its responsibilities towards the victims of abuse." It's simply totally untrue. The way the highest levels of the church, and I'm talking here about archbishops and bishops and the National Safeguarding Office, the way they treat people like me, the people I speak with, can only be described as enduringly cruel and enduringly sadistic.
What is it they do?
Well, it depends who you are, but a common theme is to ignore. It's quite well known. There's one fellow who wrote 17 times, I think it was, before he received a reply from the current Archbishop of Canterbury. I'm still waiting for a reply to a letter I wrote to him asking for help many weeks ago. You just get nothing. Another thing they do is they promise to help in some way. I know that Neil Todd's partner was promised all sorts of financial help, hardly got any. He had a problem even burying Neil's body. And the church said they'd help, and not all of it came through. Been all sorts of other things. In my own case, as a serving priest, and I'm one of the few victims of Peter Ball who is still in the church and serving as a priest, the common way that I've been treated is to isolate, to be isolated and vilified. You know, they say they don't have blacklists, but they certainly exist. You know, I've been promised a good reference to go somewhere and then find that that's reneged upon by a secret phone call, negating what had been said in the written reference. It's all pretty nasty. And of course, the real problem behind it is that the hierarchy of the church, I think, believe that their primary objective is to save the face and reputation of the institution of the church, rather than being guardians of the truth.
Sorry, I'm just going to say, to be clear, because we talked about this abuse taking place in the 1990s and before, what you're talking about, the isolation and the vilification, the enduringly cruel and sadistic treatment, is, in your experience, being meted out now by today's Church of England.
Oh, absolutely. Without any doubt at all. And it's not simply from my own experience. I hear this from many other victims of abuse. They ring me, they want to meet with me, and I hear the same story. It's a similar pattern throughout. You know, I received a letter of apology from the Archbishop of Canterbury, and I think the Bishop of Bath and Wells has issued another apology today. It's frankly crocodile tears. I just don't believe them. And it doesn't have to be like that, and that's what's so sad, because so many of the organisations seeking to help the church change are really positive, but just treated in the most appalling way and kept at arm's length. I think the only way that we can redeem this situation is if the whole business of safeguarding in the Church of England is actually given to an independent body to administer. Just like the police, BBC even, and journalists, it needs someone from outside the organisation who doesn't have all those personal and emotional ties and self-interest. It needs people outside to be able to look at it objectively. You know, there are some good things happen, I have to say. You know, the Church of England is being very good at developing protocols and procedures and training programs to try to ensure this doesn't happen in the future. But it still hasn't read through the past and dealt with the victims of the past in a compassionate and loving way.
Can I ask you finally, and I should say, obviously, we'll ask to get a response to what you're saying from the Church of England, and we'll feature that in our programme tomorrow if the Church wants to come on. But obviously you have your faith, which I'm sure is lifelong and probably won't change. But you're not obliged to stay in the Church of England, are you? And I just wonder, given everything that's happened to you, including what's happening now, why stay?
Well, it's very interesting. I was actually ordained priest by Rowan Williams, who I think is one of the heroes in this whole thing. If he hadn't contacted the police and initiated all these inquiries, we wouldn't be where we are today. Now, OK, maybe he should have acted a little quicker and so on, but he certainly has got us where we are today. But I remember Rowan Williams saying to me that as a priest, sometimes you're called to be prophetic. And prophets actually tell what's wrong now. They're not looking into the future. And that prophetic role of a priest, which is inherent to any priest, can be extremely uncomfortable. But it's very, very important to bear witness and speak power to truth and try to maintain the integrity of truth and love and the message of Christ that is for everyone. And so for me, I have no doubt that I am a priest and should continue to be so. And so, okay, sometimes it's more difficult than others, but I know that I'm being sustained in my priesthood, and I give thanks to God for that.
Thank you. The Reverend Graham Sawyer, the Vicar of Briarcliff in Burnley, who was one of the people attacked by Peter Ball.